at the buzzer. McBird on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get in. No timeouts. They do. Florida wins.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, two fired basketball coaches solving all the world and college basketball's problems. I'm coming to you from Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany, where I'll be part of the crew calling the Texas A&M West Virginia game. And goodness, you know, we're on an Air Force Base, so all these guys have behaved themselves properly. No one has been impounded, so that's a good thing. Dan is obviously in Indianapolis, Indiana, very close to the NCAA offices, and I'm happy to say that he has not been indicted at this point, so things are good. What's up, D-Squared?
I am not in a luxury hotel, which would be the Conrad next to our studios here. I'm not sequestered. I'm not having a pop-up store of my brand in Shanghai. And thus far, no indictments, but the day is young. So let's go. What do we get?
Hey, yeah, let's go.
Let's go. Let me ask you real quick before we get into everything. You first heard about UCLA's three players. What was your reaction, Seth?
Stupidity. Embarrassing. Look, we've all taken teams overseas. All right? And how many times do you spend with your team talking to them about making good decisions? And especially when you go overseas, especially when you make a trip like this that they are making, all right, you're ambassadors for your family, you're ambassadors for your institution, you're representing the United States of America. An absolutely reckless, it's absurd to even think that someone would act that with that little of an understanding of the difference between right and wrong. I mean, an embarrassment. It's an absolute embarrassment. The only thing that was more embarrassing is LeVar Ball saying it's no big thing.
Let me go two things. You know, I do a radio show here in Indy, and obviously
a little radio show.
Yeah, a little one. And Steve Alford, obviously an Indiana icon, and LeVar Ball, you mentioned, Seth, I don't put any of this on either guy. I don't.
I agree.
But I've had people tell me, and you mentioned I've taken team to Chile, and I remember saying, look, like, I literally brought police in and said, you don't know the laws, and we tried to give them some of them. Don't spit on the street. Don't engage a cop. Like, I wanted to show them the movie Midnight Express just so that they understood here. LeVar Ball's parenting, I just don't put this on LeVar Ball's parenting.
I don't put it on him either, but I also I put it on his reaction to it.
Yes, yes. Like, people are telling me, well, Steve should have had him know. Well, you do know, and he did. And then LeVar Ball, all right, 18-year-old kids make mistakes, but I will say this, Seth. I also say that you don't get caught the first time most times, right? I'm not saying everybody did this before. But when I get caught speeding, which will probably be this basketball season, driving to places, it's not going to be my first time speeding. So I look at that and say, all right, what we got here? Well, you're dumb enough to do this in China where you don't even know if they might chop your hand out. Who the hell knows? But I put it solely on these three kids being incredibly stupid and nowhere else. It's where I put it.
Yeah, 100%. Look. It's not – Steve Alford can't hold players' hands 24-7. LeVar Ball obviously didn't want his son to go into a Louis Vuitton store and be part of a group of athletes that basically shoplifted. Yeah. But a couple things. One, LeVar Ball's response to it trivialized what they did. It is a big thing. You are in a foreign country. You are an ambassador. You do represent something bigger than yourself. Everyone knows right from wrong. You don't take something that's not your own. And when people say, well, they're only 18-year-olds, they make mistakes. No. I understand they make mistakes. But you know what? Different mistakes are different. Certain mistakes are different. All right? You know what I mean? This is an egregious mistake. This is an embarrassment to our country. This is embarrassment to their schools, to their families. And for anyone to say it's no big deal, well, you know what? To me, that said, LeVar, You might have a reality TV show, but this is reality.
Right.
And the reality is that, you know, something's being reported right now that, you know, these kids are going to be under house arrest for a certain period of time. I can't imagine a scenario where UCLA allows them to compete and stay in school. First of all, if they have to stay in this hotel for 20 days, they've got midterms, they've got tests, they've got classes. That's going to be an issue. Number two is I'm sure there's a conduct code, an honor code of some sort at UCLA that, you know, basically covers any type of incident like this. And finally, I mean, think about this is UCLA.
Right.
Those kids come back. They're walking across campus. Think about this. You're any of those three kids and you're walking across campus. All right. If you're Jalen Hill, if you're Cody Riley, you know, if you're Ball, all right, you three guys have to, you know what you got to do? You got to take the rest of the day off. I would suggest counseling, and then I would suggest you basically erase the grease board, find a clean slate, and start over somewhere else. That's my take on the thing.
Well, let me give you another guy's take here that I really want to get into you with, because everything is the responsibility of the NCAA, right? There's a guy named Reed Forgrave, who is a writer for college or CBS Sports, apparently college basketball, New York Times, all this kind of stuff. Let me read a tweet from you, because he's not the only one that said this. Yes, people, I understand LiAngelo and his family are rich and that kids do stupid things sometimes. Listen to this. Focus on the bigger issue. Amateur athletics rakes in billions with unpaid labor, which I disputed. This naturally, listen to this, creates a black market. Don't be surprised when bad things happen. So we're blaming this now on the fact that the NCAA doesn't pay guys. Like,
that's a joke. Well, you saw my response to the guy, right?
No.
Oh, my response to the guy was, you know, it's raining outside. Let's blame the NCAA.
Honest to God.
I mean, are you kidding me? The NCAA is not responsible for a choice of making good decision, bad decision. The NCAA, you're talking about, let's just take LiAngelo Ball. His brother's driving a Lamborghini. They just moved into a $16 million home. All right? They have pop-up shoes. That's the biggest load of crap I've ever heard. Because you know what? There are a lot. These kids that went to China with UCLA's team, they're not paying for school. They've got their housing and all their meals taken care of. They've got cost of attendance. And let's be honest, when you make a trip like that, you're also given expense money, which the NCAA allows you to have. You're going into a Louis Vuitton store, by the way, just probably outside of your campus. In Westwood, there's probably a Louis Vuitton store, but you got to decide to go to one in China to steal something.
Let me Let me read another.
I mean, that's such a cop out.
There's
the problem. We are enabling bad behavior. We're creating a reason for a bad behavior. We're blaming it on the NCAA. That is so ridiculous and such a cop out. And that's a societal issue to me. We try to create reasons and in areas where it's absolutely absurd. It was stupidity at its highest level.
Here's another tweet from the same guy, Reed Forgrave. Now, this is a writer. I'm not just picking on a person that isn't involved. These are people involved in college basketball. Perhaps these things would never have occurred if we allowed amateur athletes a bigger share of the big time pie. May I just say, so, all right, that's where we're at. So I responded with the unpaid labor thing. Here's what an unpaid guy gets. At least this is what my son gets. So people, I don't think people understand this, and I'm going to shorten it up big time. I'm just going to give you 4 or 5 points. School paid. Food and rent paid for. Experience things you never dreamed of. All the gear you could ever imagine. And Seth, people don't get this. My son, after all of these things are paid for, gets $540 every 2 weeks. Now, you may say that that's not enough. Fine, that's your argument. I'd just soon you give my son more. I don't care. You may say that they should be able to sell their likeness. Fine, if that's what you think. But don't tell me these guys are unpaid. Maybe they're not as compensated as you want. But the idea that these guys are unpaid as 18, it drives me crazy. That the bottom line is you had three kids that didn't respect their school, didn't respect China, didn't respect where they were at and what they were doing, and thus got into trouble, and that's it. It is no bigger than that, in my opinion. You don't respect things. You make a decision based on your lack of respect. You know what you end up doing? You end up in a damn jail cell in the middle of China somewhere, and then you end up on house arrest, and then you end up across a scroll on the bottom of ESPN if you're a UCLA player. Nothing more than that. Nothing more than that, Seth.
I just don't understand how we can, you know, it's so easy to point the finger. Why don't we look at ourselves? Why don't we look in the mirror? Why don't you have some accountability for your own actions? Everyone is accountable for their own actions. All right? I mean, every day people have to make choices. These kids made an egregious choice, and I guarantee you Steve Alford covered every single A to Z on the mission of this trip, what they were trying to do. It's a humanitarian trip as much as a basketball trip. It's an educational trip as much as a basketball trip. They're representing our country. Now, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported the players who were released on bail Wednesday might serve the punishment at the Hyatt Regency, the hotel that they're staying out in China, where UCLA and Georgia Tech players stayed ahead of the game. And they would basically serve out their reporting potentially a 20-day sentence, and then they'll basically be told that they can never come back to the country again.
Mm.
Now, think about that. Mm. Now, think about that. I mean, first of all, think about what UCLA has gone through. Think about what the Pac-12, the embarrassment of the Pac-12, because this is a trip that was basically sponsored in a lot of ways by the Pac-12. So to trivialize any of that and the impact it could potentially have on these kids, and look, I understand, look, we all make mistakes. I make mistakes every single day. So I don't want someone coming on Twitter and saying, oh, you're above everything. No, I've made a zillion mistakes, embarrassing mistakes, but society's different today. And when you're on foreign soil, it's really different. And why do we continue to not hold people accountable for their actions? It's their actions. It's not LeVar's actions. It's not Coach Alford's actions. It's not UCLA's actions. These kids need to be held accountable to their own actions. Moving forward, I just can't see a scenario. Because let's face it, again, these are alleged. Of these three guys are guilty. You've got to treat all three of them the same.
Yeah.
You got to treat all three. And I'll tell you what, because one of the guys, Cody Riley, can really play. He can really play. Jalen Hill is a prospect, and LiAngelo Ball is an if. I mean, that's just being honest in terms of evaluating their talent. So we've had that bit of news, in college basketball. And then we have the situation yesterday. The indictment suggests ex-Louisville coach Rick Pitino was aware of the bribery scheme. A new federal indictment against Adidas executive Jim Gatto suggests Pitino was aware of the scheme to pay Cardinals recruit Brian Bowen and even participated in the plan. The indictment, which was released Wednesday by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, includes a new description of a meeting in a Las Vegas hotel room July 27th. Now, if that is true, and I said something the other day, I said I expect Rick Pitino would coach again if he wasn't indicted. And I expect if he was not part of it, but once again, under his watch, some things went astray, someone would hire him. If this is true, no way, no how he coaches again in college.
I agree with that. Here's my question, and I don't want to see anybody go to jail. I don't. I mean, you said it, man. People make mistakes. Hell, I made mistakes. I mean, honest to God, and I'm more in the LaBall situation. I'm more at the adults around it. You know, the kids did what they did. They got to serve their time. But I do ask the question of, we've seen four guys, and I'm not smart enough to know why. We've seen, four coaches be indicted. I guess my question is, if in fact this report is true, why isn't Rick Pitino indicted if he did participate? Now, it seems to me that what you just read is, while probably true, there's no evidence there. There's no real time evidence. You know, there's no informant saying this is absolute. That's the only thing that I can see. Rick Pitino coaching again in college, Seth. I think two things. I think time heals all, and I think get fired for anything in the world but losing. So NBA, college, I don't know. But this is certainly not the greatest look for Rick Pitino, because you know and I know that Rick Pitino has come out very publicly saying he's going to sue Adidas, saying he was fired too prematurely. I thought hookers in the basketball dorm was enough to, at least when I coach, I always figured if one of my coaches or I set up hookers for recruits, I'm probably going to get fired, but he survived that. So I guess this is ongoing, and I don't know the law enough to understand why he isn't one of those guys doing the perp walk. I don't know.
Well, here's my take on it. Someone obviously flipped. See, to me, this says someone somehow, some way, flipped and said, wait a second, you know, you've got me, but in this situation, it was, you know, there were other people involved. You know, this person, and obviously Rick Pitino's name came up because it said, last sentence to me is the one that gets,
yeah.
Wednesday by the University, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District includes a new description of a meeting. So, well, where's the new description of that meeting? So that meeting's either a meeting with, and again, I don't want to speculate, but I'm just reading into it. It probably Rick Pitino and Jim Gatto, or Christian Dawkins and Rick Pitino. But if this is true, it changed my position, and it shocks me. And I go back to the naivety of it all. You know, you're Rick Pitino. You're Louisville. You got a great team. I don't get it. Things don't just happen. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. We're so lucky to have this guy. You say that, you sit down with Jay Billis and say unequivocally you're innocent, that you had no knowledge, and then this comes out. You put those things on top of each other. I know winning trumps all.
Based on what you were saying right there, do you see what I just said about how isn't Pitino involved in an indictment? Do you see, based on, again, what you just read, that possibly coming down the road?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, because if he's mentioned in the indictment, you would think he's being interviewed. Without a doubt, you would think anyone involved in the Brian Bowen situation would be interviewed. Here's my thing. And I know we've seen a lot of things. You know, people are talking about, well, you know, players get suspended, but coaches don't get suspended. I've seen that 8,000 times. You know, actually, I think you were even part of something today. Here's my deal. Coaches have been suspended. Rick Pitino, he was fired. He wasn't just suspended. All right, the four assistant coaches, they've been suspended, some without pay, some have just been flat fired. You know, the eligibility that's going on, whether it's with Colin Sexton or the two players at Auburn, you have to clear a clearinghouse to be eligible to play each and every year. There are certain things that players and coaches have to sign off on. All right. Academically, you've got to pass a certain number of hours. You've got to it's not an affidavit, but a statement that you accepted no extra benefits. There are certain things that go along with clearing your eligibility each and every year. And to me,
but there are for coaches too.
Yeah. Well, the coaches in the end have to sign off on the players that are eligible.
Right. Right.
So, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. So knowing that you signed off on a guy that you cheated for, why isn't? While the investigation is going on, Seth, here's the thing.
Because as soon as the investigation begins, the coach signs off after the player signs off. So the player signs off and says, I haven't taken any extra benefits, I haven't done this, I haven't done that. And then the coach signs their roster eligibility form, basically is what it is. Say Bruce Pearl, if he didn't know what Chuck Persons did, and we're going to get into Bruce Pearl in a second, if he didn't know what that transpired, he's going to sign off on that form. So we've seen coaches lose their job. We've seen coaches be suspended without pay. So, we've seen those situations happen.
Seth, my point is they're holding them out from play during the pending investigation. Why aren't coaches who have to sign off on these kids at the beginning? Bruce Pearl didn't hold these guys out pending an investigation. None of these coaches did, you know, until they were notified. They knew what had happened, if they knew. Why aren't they held out? You're held out pending, and I get what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying. But if we're going to hold people out pending investigation and whether they're eligible, you know,
because if you play that guy, here's the thing: if you play that guy, and then you find out he isn't eligible, you play him and find then you're going to forfeit those games.
Right, I get that because
you're playing an ineligible player.
But I get the coaches can't be ineligible. Okay, I mean, you know, unless you know, I just don't. It just doesn't. I go by the feel, I suppose. Here, Seth. Like you remember when you said about North Carolina, and I thought you made a really good point last podcast where you said North Carolina, you know, should do something on their own. They should forfeit what you know scholarships self imposed. Well, if I would be a very bad AD, because I would say to the coach, look. I'm suspending your ass too. Now, we'll pay you. I mean, I'm not going to screw around with a contract because a contract has to mean something. But it hit me. The reason I tweeted out what I did, and you had a great response to it, was because of what you said about Carolina doing something on their own. Like, all right, let's take the Auburn situation, right? You said it. They got two kids sitting out, and now it's come out that Bruce Pearl, who we both really like, I really like Bruce, but he's not participating in the investigation. So if I'm the athletic director, based on what you said about North Carolina, or I'm the president of Auburn, based on what you said about North Carolina, do something that's right, I might have to say, Bruce, you're going to sit this out until we get to the bottom of all this, period. Is that unreasonable? Does that not make logical sense? Because you have a better sense of what's...
Let me update the listeners on what has been reported. And basically what's reported is Paul Levine and Mark Schleba have reported that Bruce Pearl is refusing to cooperate with the school's internal investigation into his program. And the university officials have advised him that his job is in jeopardy. Bruce Pearl's stance on this, I would suppose, is that if he goes and interviews with the internal investigation and say he answers a question, the FBI internal investigation has access, obviously, to all that information. Actually, anyone has it, probably through the Freedom of Information Act, that I don't know what they call it in Alabama, that say he, by accident, because he's going to be asked about 8,000 things, misspeaks. All right, and then all of a sudden it's proven that maybe he took something out of context or he said something that he didn't interpret correctly or something happened maybe that he didn't know about. And again, I'm building
you're building a case.
A conversation for Bruce. He doesn't want to be held accountable to the FBI. There's a big difference, as we said the other, between an NCAA violation and a federal law.
I get all
and
that.
One you can go to jail with, one you'll never coach again.
I get all that. And, man, those cuffs are tight, I'm assuming. But I get all that. But I'm not talking about Bruce. And I get why he wouldn't want to. But
he doesn't want to until the FBI investigation is over.
I get that.
I think his point of view is, why should I? Because he hasn't been indicted. Right. He hasn't been mentioned. Chuck Person is taking responsibility for it. Again, I'm not picking sides here. I'm telling you what I know. So he's saying, let the FBI investigation play out, then I'll do whatever you want. It's going to be interesting. This is a game of Russian roulette between Auburn, how much they want Bruce Pearl as their coach, versus Bruce Pearl saying, look, I'll do whatever you want, but let the FBI investigation play out. Now, here's the one question I have on it, though. The FBI has cleared Austin Wiley and Dangelle Purifoy to speak with the internal investigation. I would think they've probably cleared Bruce Pearl to speak to the internal investigation. So I don't know how that works out, but it's going to be interesting to see what Auburn does, especially since they've already basically fired their athletic director. the athletic director that hired Bruce Pearl.
And they've come out. I mean, how does it get out that Bruce Pearl isn't cooperating? Like, it got out yesterday. How does that get out? Apparently, they wanted it out. I mean, Auburn must have wanted that out. That's my coach's insecurity, I think.
Yeah, no, I think, look, without a doubt, I mean, I think every school, you know, when you get involved with the NCAA, all right, every school is going to work and do what's in their institution's best interest. So, like, if someone gets involved in an NCAA situation, all right, the coach has his attorney, the institution has their attorney, and they're not collaborating. They're not on the same page. Each entity is working on behalf of their client, the institution, to try and minimize damages, and obviously the person that's representing the coach to do the same for their client. So this is going to be a very contentious situation, and you're going to get a better feel. New president at Auburn. There'll be a new AD in the near future, and there could be a new coach.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I would assume that – I mean, you can't separate the two, but I would assume that Auburn's pretty happy with Bruce as the coach. You know, I mean, he certainly brings energy and he gets kids, you know. But this overrides everything, and we'll just have to see how it goes. Again, you said this, Seth, and you could not have been more right. You are the guru of gurus. this is an ongoing. You said this about 4 weeks ago when we did our thing. This is an ongoing deal that is going to have a lot of tentacles throughout this season. And I said this at the ESPN meeting, and you know, I meant it. It's sad that college basketball is in many ways becoming like the NFL in that all you talk about is the crapola. All you talk about is the external stuff, not the internal. Who's playing well? Who's doing this? But you have to, because that's what is driving the bus right now. It just is. And Patino and Pearl and, you know.
UCLA, what about Georgia Tech? Josh Pastor, you know, two players accepting illegal benefits. They self-reported. Some guy comes out of the woodwork. And suggest that it, you know, kind of intimated that it was at the asking of Josh Pastor. Josh Pastor obviously denies that. This guy has a criminal record. He and Josh were at one time, you know, extremely close. That's very much documented. We're living in a society, though, where any, you know, accusations, we got to remember now, there's a difference between an accusation and something that is fact.
Oh,
either way, I'm not judging either way, but because of the culture of our game right now, because of everything that's gone on, because of now the FBI being involved, every single incident takes on a life of its own, is larger than life, and is taking on a greater value than maybe it would if we weren't in this culture since, I think it was September 27th.
Yeah. No, look. It's just, to me, you're over there in Germany, and you're doing all these things. You're promoting a game. You're interacting with the troops. You know, you're going to go help Huggins coach kids. You're doing some great, great things over there. But, you know, the first thing you and I discussed off air was who's not playing in the game. This guy got a DUI. This guy got a 3-game suspension. I mean, to me, the world of college basketball is reaping what we are sowing as a college basketball society, meaning the entitlement, the, hey, don't worry about it when kids are younger, now come into college basketball, and coaches now and the NCAA and all the entities are now dealing with it. The vast majority are great kids. Our problem is we can't talk about it because we get stuck with all this crap. And that, to me, is very, very sad. It just is, because there's a lot of things
going. We should have a great year
of
college basketball.
Yes, it should be a great year.
If you eliminated the static right now,
yes.
Think about what we have.
Yes.
We got Duke with this different personality, a big front court. Can they shoot it well enough, you know? You've got Arizona with, you know, Ayton, who could be a monster. Alonzo Trier comes back. Miles Bridges is back. I mean, you're talking about.
Look, you have across the board,
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Wichita State as a mid-major is not, as not a mid-major, but as a team that is not in the Power Five is all of a sudden going to be like, whoa, wait a second. That might be, I don't know if it's the best team in the country, but it's going to be in the conversation for most of the day. I mean, there's great stories with kids. There's, you know, it's just, but we get stuck, Seth. We get stuck on certain things, and then the really good things about this sport or other sports get sent by the bypass, and I think we have an obligation to give people our opinion on all of the crapola, but I certainly
hope we still got to celebrate. We have a chance to have an incredible...
Yes.
If we can get to it. Now, it's not the other stuff's not disappearing.
No.
Like, the other stuff's not disappearing. This investigation is going to go on throughout the year. There are going to be things that are going to pop up that are going to take away from it. But we've got great experienced teams, very good experience. We've got really teams with incredible amount of potential. We've got leagues emerging, like the SEC is emerging as a team that could put a bunch of teams, you know, in the tournament. You know, we've got stories like Kansas, who's looking for their 14th straight Big 12 championship. You know, you've got stuff on, you know, the Big Ten. I'm not sure there's a bad team in the Big Ten. You know, there's so many good stories in college basketball, and yet we're having a hard time bringing them out because, you know, again, since the sensationalism of what is happening, they become bigger than the game. The game becomes like...
Yes.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you talk about this trip. Like, one thing I learned on this trip, and I've never really been on a military base, the collective responsibility for the people that live and work here and protect our country, and the manner in which they do what they do and the pride they have and the collective responsibility and the trust, and they do it without ego, and the checks and balances that everything they do, there is a system behind it. It is absolutely, I'm blown away. I mean, this trip to Germany and spending 4 days with the troops every day is almost a life-altering experience for me. Because I asked all the, why are you here? And you know, the reasons these guys come here and join the military are all different. But the reasons they stay are all the same. That they don't care who's president. They don't care about Democrat. They don't care about Republican. They care about our country. And that's all they work towards every day, to help enable us to live the way we live, in the environment we live. And it's been an absolutely incredible experience for me to interact with these men and women. It's really been blown me away.
Yeah, how cool is that, man? Really? I mean, you know, you sit there and this is where sometimes you got to look at your life, and whether you're in sports or whether you're in business or whether you're whatever, and go, man, how cool is where this particular thing has taken me? You know, how cool is it that basketball has taken you there? How cool is it that whatever job you're at, you know, sometimes in every walk of life, you got to sit back and go, whoa, wait a second here. This is all right. Like, man, like I always say to people all the time, just because when I was a kid, I had no personality, didn't want to talk to anybody. So I just shot baskets in my driveway with my music on, so I didn't have to talk to anybody, didn't have to see anybody, didn't have to go to a dance, didn't have to go to a, you know, the girls' house, nothing. It taken me all across the world just because you do that. And that's exactly what every industry has, and I think it's so cool that you guys are doing that, and I can't
wait a second. I can't let this go.
It's true.
Wait a sec. Dan Dockage, my guy.
Yes.
Introverted.
Yes.
Wouldn't talk to anyone.
No.
Had no friends.
I don't know about that. I had a lot of friends, but I didn't want to. I would much rather in high school.
What happened?
I don't know. Now I got no friends, and I like to talk too much. But no, you know, like I was shooting around. I remember Gretchen Wellman's house behind my house. Everybody was there building a homecoming float. And I'm like, I don't want to go there. You know, they're all my friends. I just want to shoot baskets. I mean, there was a song by Andrew Gold called Lonely Boy, and that was my song. I'm like, that's it, man. Let's go.
I got a question.
Yeah.
If you were shooting baskets all the time.
Yeah.
Why didn't Knight ever let you shoot?
Because in my world, Seth, if you were a jump shooter, you were soft. Like, you couldn't, if you didn't drive to the basket, like, I didn't realize that guys that shot jump shots could be tough until I went to Indiana and saw Whitman and Alford and Ted Kitchell. In my world, growing up in Gary, Indiana, if you shot jump shots, you know, so it was all working on drives and, you know, left hand, right. I mean, so anyway, whatever. Don't get me started on Mike. My career wasn't good enough to talk about.
You know what? Hey, no. When we come back, we're going to have a chance to visit with Indiana head coach, Indiana head coach. Archie Miller, but first, we've got a little sponsor.
Yes, sir.
Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron has established a partnership with over 150 local farms. That's a lot of farms.
Yes.
Fisheries, ranchers across the United States. As a result, seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in a partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. That's unbelievable. Beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. Produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming.
Yeah, Seth doesn't really know what the hell all that means. All it means is that it's really local for you, and it's damn good. Here's some of their featured upcoming meals. Listen to this. One of their favorites is a seared chicken roasted fall vegetables with caper butter pan sauce. 30-minute meal, shrimp and pesto fettuccine with a little bit of spinach. How about some black bean and cheese tortas with roasted broccoli, lime, sour cream, sweet pepper chicken with, I don't even know how to say it, but I'll go.
Bok choy.
And rice, Seth. I'm telling you.
It's so easy. All right. We had the salmon dinner one day. I cooked it for my wife, and she liked it. I mean, that's how easy it is. Everything is right there for you. The ingredients tasted unbelievable. Let's face it. They don't call me Emerald Greenberg. I mean, that's how easy it is. And it was absolutely terrific.
Guys, and I know guys listen to this. You want to go home, you want to cook a meal. You need step-by-step instructions, and it's easy. You got a recipe card, pre-portioned ingredients, and you can do all this, like Seth said, in 40 minutes. And the key is your wife will like it. And if your wife is happy, guess what, people? Your whole world is happy. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook. And if it doesn't, they're going to make it right. And if Seth and I can make them, I'm guaranteeing you, you guys can make them.
Anyone can. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SETH.
Oh, boy.
That happens to be my name. How about that? That's pretty big time. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create an incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/Seth. Blue Apron. You know what it is, Dan?
Tell me.
A better way to cook. We'd like to welcome in the new Indiana head basketball coach. Actually, he's not that new anymore, but just starting his first season, Archie Miller. Arch, welcome to Two Fired Coaches Talking Ball with all the answers. We're undefeated. I'm for 5 years. How long have you been undefeated, Dan?
I've been undefeated for 10.
For 10.
Nine,
so,
10, life, I don't know.
Life is good, but you take the Indiana job. You've had so many other offers. Just now you've been here, you're back, you're in practice, you're with your team. Is Indiana everything you expected it to be?
Yeah, you know it is. And I think every place that you go, regardless whether you're an assistant, assistant or head coach along the way, you sort of learn on the run how it works for you, how it's going to be, you know, as you feel more comfortable down the line. But it's an awe-inspiring job, you know, and to practice in Assembly Hall, and Coach Dockett, you can probably attest to, there's been some unbelievable teams and practices and competitive sweat on the floor in that place. And, you know, when you're a basketball person like me, you kind of look around, you say to yourself, man, this is incredible to be, you know, running this place and having the opportunity to coach in front of these type of fans and this fan base. And then, you know, just being in Bloomington in general has been, you know, really, really great for my family. And it's an unbelievable college town. This is what college basketball is about. And, you know, it gets better and better by the day.
What have you learned about your team? Obviously, you're with them in the summer. And you've, you know, mm-hmm. first thing you do when you take over a job is you try to develop those relationships and earn the trust of your new team, and they get a feeling for the expectation that you have for them. But what did you learn about your team once practice started? Because I think that's, you know, it's different. You know, it's kind of like when the light goes on for real on that really first practice, those first 2 weeks, you really learn a little bit more about your team. What did you learn about your team?
I think the one thing is, you know, it's like you said, once you start competing and you start putting, you know, wins and losses in practice or one-on-one battles or two-on-two, the one thing that we've seen is guys really work hard. They're really good kids. And you give Coach Crane and his staff a lot of credit for the character level and the work ethic that they have. You know, you're dealing with a group of guys that are used to working hard. And now, you know, you feel like you're just teaching everything just because of what you do is different. Your views of things are different. Their views of things are different. So you're trying to put that all together and just teach them. And they're very coachable. So I think, you know, right now with being 0-0 or 1-0 or 0-1, that's got to be the thing that kind of carries us through sort of the grind here, because we are going to keep getting better slowly but surely, because we have a lot of room to grow. There's just a lot of experience that we have to catch up with in terms of, you know, the game, whether it be film. But I think the great thing is they're a coachable group. They're not fighting anything, and they want to do well. They want to please everyone around them. So it's a good group to be around.
Hey, Archie, this is a question because Seth Greenberg loves this guy. You told me about him yesterday. Colin Hartman coming back.
Mm-hmm. It's my guy.
Yeah, that's Seth's guy. So would you please affirm that us two fired coaches loving a player is what the coach feels, the head coach of the particular team?
Yeah, I mean, he's a joy. I don't want to say joy to be around, but, man, he's refreshing. I mean, he's one of those guys that, like, he's got an infectious attitude. He inspires people around him. Everyone knows what he's been through physically in his time. But competitive guy, loves Indiana, wants to win, cares about his teammates, cares about his coaches, goes about his business in a way that, you know, he's an example for everyone. This is how you do it. And not afraid to speak his mind when things aren't going like they should be. You know, he's that guy that isn't afraid to speak. And as a coach, on a new team with some new staff members, to have an extension around you in the locker room, on the floor, off the floor, when you're not around, you know he's got your back. So he's an extension of the staff. And I say from a basketball player standpoint, really makes things happen. You know, can shoot the ball, dribble, pass, and shoot guy. You know, has great feel and isn't afraid. You know, he's been in big games. So absolutely, you know, your feelings towards a guy like him, he's a guy you want to be around.
Indiana fans, two things, you know. Number one, defensively didn't feel that the team was up to par. Number two, the turnovers. Again, you and I talked yesterday. You've addressed this, obviously, because you had 18 turnovers in two games. If you don't mind talking about those two areas with your team.
Well, I definitely think that, you know, the defensive side of the ball is something that we're – you know, probably, you know, complete 180 in terms of one, philosophy, and two, the daily approach. So they're getting used to, you know, the physicality of the practices, the competition, the, you know, honoring the details, and honestly watching themselves on film, in many ways not doing what we're asking them to do and being held accountable with minutes playing in games or practices. Those are the things that we're trying to instill. And I think, you know, we can be a hard playing team. You know, I don't think that we're going to be great defensively here early, just because, you know, we're going to need to go through some games where, you know, you got to learn on the run. But it's an emphasis, and they know that, and it's as important as anything that we do. Taking care of the ball, you know, obviously you guys know as well as I do, if you don't turn the ball over, you know, you have a chance to get a good shot. You have a chance to, you know, hang in there on most nights if you don't turn it over. And we're really, really preaching right now is less dribbling, less quick shots. Less dribbling, less quick shots. You know, be patient, move the ball, move yourself, work in and around the paint. Find the paint with the pass or the dribble and then, you know, play out of it. But, you know, the quick shooting and I think just some of the organization and transition of just understanding, hit the first open man and move, trust it. And that's been a big emphasis. You know, we've turned the ball over like you said, I think, you know, maybe 18 times, average of 9 a game. If that was the case all season, that would be one of the best, you know, I've ever had as a coach. I think we'll turn it over a little bit more. But shot selection goes into that as well. You know, taking a great shot, not quick threes. Don't take three or four quick threes in a row. You know, those are like turnovers, too, if they're not good ones. So, but definitely, I think those two things are being emphasized. And they'll be emphasized, you know, regardless of what Indiana has done in the past. Those are things that I think you have to do well as a team to be successful.
You talk about guard play, and obviously you're going to play a different style of basketball. Tom brought his bigs away from the basket, and they handled the ball a great deal. But point guard play, play starters, the ability to guard the ball at the point of attack. A guy like Robert Johnson, is it comforting to have a guy with that experience and a little bit of toughness that's athletic enough to guard multiple positions and hopefully embraces take care of the basketball? I mean, do you see him as a real vital piece of what you're doing?
I think there's no doubt about Rob. He's been in a lot of big games. He's played a lot of minutes, and he's going to be trusted to do a lot of different things for us. I want to keep things simple for Rob, just in terms of I want him to be very aggressive on offense, but I also want him to be simplified where he's not thinking a whole lot. You know, I think giving him great confidence and not having to make a lot of decisions with the ball or not having to run the team. You know, I kind of want Rob to be a guy that's able to play off of other people and can be himself. You know, he's a great shooter. Obviously, he can use that as his advantage and get to the foul line a little bit. And he's also been willing passer here early. So I think he's got a good mode there. Defensively, yes. I mean, he's got to be able to guard three perimeter positions for us. He's a strong kid. He's got the talent level, and he's got some physicality to him. And, you know, we're trying to bring the best out. You know, there's going to be times where we'll have three small guards on the floor where he's going to, you know, maybe have to deal with a bigger wing, or, you know, we may have to put him right at the top. You know, he may have to guard the other team's best point guard on a given night. And, you know, I add in Josh Newkirk as well as a fifth-year senior that's played college basketball. It's been out there. You know, those two guys, man, if they can be solid for us on both ends of the floor, just don't, you know, have a 1-2 punch that doesn't get you beat. You know, they don't beat themselves, so to speak. They take good shots. They don't turn it over. They work on defense. You know, I think those two guys are going to play an important role for us.
Yeah, you're going to be more of a – your team's at Dayton where it's so good defensively and tough and physical, more pack line. And then offensively, running some sets but running a lot of motion. What the Indiana fans are going to see, is it going to be more, say, a more Bob Knight-looking type team?
Well, you know, we've run a couple different, play the game after a play or when the break doesn't work. You know, we want to be a team that plays with concepts. And I think, you know, sometimes we've been a free-moving concepts where it's flares and back screens and cutting, and sometimes it's more spacing. And I think what we're trying to focus in here at Indiana is play with great spacing. You know, be able to drive the ball, know where your outlets are, post the ball, know where your outlets are, and then, you know, create a second, third side ball movement, player movement. So I don't necessarily know if it's going to look like poetry in motion, but I will say hopefully if it's doing well, the ball's moving, it's pinging, and you're getting a lot of action out of it. And, you know, to me it's a simpler way to play than we've played in the past just because, you know, we're teaching everything right now. But I think the pace of play has got to be up. We have to have great tempo on makes and misses, which we always have done. You know, I think our teams at Dayton, you know, thrived in transition, which we want to be great in transition. But, you know, play the game after the play is where it's a lot different here right now than it's ever been, you know, and how we're using the players and what we're asking them to do. So, you know, I think that'll be a work in progress.
Hey, Archie, your dad, great high school coach, your brother, Arizona, has a team that may be Final Four bound. How much has your dad from Blackhawk High School, Pennsylvania, your coach, Sean's coach, great high school coach, noted tough coach, how much has he influenced your style?
A lot. You know, as much as anything, as crazy as it sounds, I'm probably a lot like my dad in terms of how he coaches the game, what he loves about the game. And, you know, I think it starts in the gym individually. You know, you have to be able to make guys better. The thing that he's always preached to me as I've gotten a little bit older here is, you know, keep teaching. He always would say that, keep teaching. I never knew, you know, what are you talking about, keep teaching. But he's right. You know, you're a teacher. You have to be able to teach a guy how to do certain things and don't, you know, look at it as if he can't do it. You got to teach him how to do it. And I think that's the thing I think I've gotten from him the most is, you know, being able to teach guys what to do, how to get better. And, yeah, it's a big emphasis in our program, And I think our players understand that guys get better. They learn how to get better throughout the course of the season. Your team can always improve regardless of the time of year. You can find a way to keep getting better. And I think that's a big thing. But there's an intensity level that you need to do, you know, sort of go about your business, and ultra competitive. You know, I think that's the thing that he always would instill, not only in us as players or our teams that I played on, was ultra competitive. You know, you just don't back down from anything. And there's definitely a lot of who he was and what we do and even how we practice right now.
When you get into a situation, you know, you're a young guy. You got a great job. You did a great job at Dayton. How much you call him? You call you call Sean. Everybody needs somebody. Is your dad the guy you go to?
Well, yeah, family in general. You obviously talk to your brother when you can. He's living in the same world as you are, dealing with the same problems, same players, same practices. I like to call my dad after the games more than anything because he watches the games. I know he watches all the games, and he sort of knows how we play. And when you call him right after the game, win or lose, you know, he's got about two or three things he'll tell you, and you're like, yep. And it's the same thing I kind of think about. And he may even say something, man, we got to get this guy going here. You know, you got to get this guy kind of doing this a little bit for you. He'll help you. And he's always been positive, nothing very critical. It's always been just a couple of thoughts, talking about the team, the game, et cetera. And he usually ends it the same way. Well, just keep plugging along. You'll get there.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, Arch, your dad is a great coach, and he's a great guy for basketball. I mean, I still remember the old five-star days, and obviously spending time with you when you were younger, and Sean, and you know, it's a basketball family. Your family got into coaching because of making an impact on kids and loving the game, and you know, it's obviously a reflection of your dad on how both your and Sean's teams have played and the success you guys have had. And have a great year. Enjoy it, man. I know you're building something special, and you know, as we all know, the most important thing is enjoy what you do and love what you do. And it seems like you're a perfect fit and having a great experience. So we appreciate you hanging out with us, and have a great season.
Appreciate it, man.
Dan, I'd like to thank Archie Miller for joining us. I think we solved some of the world's problems, at least a little bit of basketball's problems. And you know what the great thing about that is? We get to do it again next week, except next week we get to talk about some real games.
All right.
I'm not talking about practice.
We ain't talking about
I'm not
practice.
Talking about the FBI. I'm talking about games.
Let's talk about
some games.
Practice. You know what I thought was great about today? Not only did we solve basketball problems, but we solved most kids 18 and just around that age's life problems as well, Seth. It's just what we do.
Make good decisions. Dan, make good decisions this week. We'll see
no
you.
Chance.
If you download this before Friday, we'll see you Texas A&M, West Virginia. When's your first game, Danny boy?
I'm in Maui. I'm Jay Billis's caddy. I do the afternoon in Maui. Then we get on a flight, and then we head to Portland. So Maui, Portland. Going to see a lot of Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockage over the holidays. Isn't that great with your turkey?
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.